curse in almost every post. I try to like do little asterisks instead of spell out the F word. But that's because I curse like a sailor in person. Like, it would be weird if I didn't do that in my written content. And so it's all about thinking through, like, how are you in real life when you are really being you? And how do you bring that energy and that style to your content and to your online brand?
Hi, I'm Bob Mathers, and welcome to The Growth Mixtape, a podcast where I talk to the most interesting people you might not have come across yet. I find that these conversations give me new insights and perspectives about topics I didn't know existed. These conversations might not seem to have a lot in common at first. Just like songs and a mixtape, it creates something memorable and emotional. Today we talked to Casey Jones, who coaches business leaders on the transformative process of building a personal brand. If you're not sure what a personal brand is or why you need one, you're not alone. Casey makes the case that by embracing your quirkiness, you'll stand out and be known for the rock star that you are. Casey and I bonded over our love of Johnny Cash, the Beach Boys, and the music producer Rick Rubin's new book, The Creative Act. Oh, and she introduced me to something called stripperoki. Yeah, it's exactly what you think it is. Please enjoy Casey Jones. Hi, Casey Jones. I'm super excited for this conversation. Thanks for joining the pod and welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
So you're in Portland, right? So it's early morning there. I must admit, I've got kind of some preconceived notions about life in Portland.
Tell me about those.
You know, I don't want to share them yet, but what do you love about Portland? If I was going to come there, what would you do? What are you most proud of about that place?
Okay, so here's what I love about Portland. And I've lived in Portland a really long time. So I've been here. I moved here to go to college 22 plus years ago and just stayed. And so I lived in Portland when Portland was basically just like one giant dive bar and it wasn't cool. When I first moved here, I remember all my parents' friends were like, Oregon, what's in Oregon? It's just trees, right? Why are you there? What I love about Portland is that we don't take a lot of things very seriously. What we do take seriously are the quality of life. So food is absolutely incredible. Amazing beer, amazing wine, amazing cocktails. There's incredible like nature everywhere. We have the largest forested park within city limits anywhere in North America. Might be just the United States. I don't know. You know, we take our sensory pleasures very seriously. This is not true anymore because lots of real estate development changed this. But for a really long time, up until just a few years ago, we had more strip clubs per capita than any other North American city. But they're not normal. It's more like you're at like a cool, weird dive bar where there happens to be a naked lady dancing. So like the example I always give, because it's just funny, there's a bar not that far from my house where they have stripperoki on Sundays. Now, I haven't been to this since like my 20s, but literally like you go and you sing karaoke while she dances to your song. It's not sexy. It's hilarious. It's absurd. Like it's totally, it's bawdy and it's fun and it's totally different. But we're super close to incredible nature. You're what, about an hour and a half from the mountain, about an hour and a half from the ocean. There's parks absolutely everywhere. And it's interesting. Now I'm going to like mildly offend you. Portlanders are kind of like Canadians. They're really, really nice. They're really kind, which also means they're a little passive aggressive. And they sometimes aren't going to tell you exactly how they feel. And I'm originally from the East Coast. So like my very direct nature is sometimes a little off-putting for Portlanders. But it also kind of sets me apart here. It's a really great city and it's a great place to live.
Yeah, I've never heard anybody that's gone there say a bad thing about it.
Yeah.
So the strip joint thing, I mean, I don't want to talk. I haven't been to a strip joint in 25 years or something. And I'm perfectly fine with my strip joint days being behind me. But those sorts of like weird, quirky things where you could go on, you've got sort of your own private dancer dancing beside you while you're singing, you know, Billy Joel or something, that would be something that I would be like, okay, I got to check this out.
It's just like funny and it's weird. There's also, and it actually closed during COVID, or I shouldn't say closed, it moved locations, but the oldest strip club in Portland, Mary's, was like, I mean, I'd been in business for 80 years or something like that. Yeah. And I'm not exaggerating. The way that the dancer would get music to play is she had a big jukebox on the stage. And so she'd have to like look through and like put a quarter in. I mean, it was like so weird and quirky and not what you think of. It's like more, I don't know. It feels like it's out of a movie, not, I don't know. It's a very different kind of energy.
Yeah. Well, I love that. So you and I crossed paths, I don't know, 3 months ago, six months or so ago. And it's really interesting. So you do personal branding, and it's, I must admit, I didn't know this was a thing until I found you and started following you and we struck up a conversation. But it's one of those things that I had, you know, been in business for a while, built up a pretty successful business, was happy. Never occurred to me that I needed to focus on personal branding. And now that I've seen it and I understand it a little bit more, I can't unsee it. Like, I can't imagine my business without it. But I'd love to hear what personal branding is to you and how you found yourself in the middle of it.
It's interesting. So I've had my own business now for a little over 6 years. And most of my career has been spent working with early stage tech startups, B2B SaaS. I wound up doing a fair amount of work with B2B service-based businesses. And the way I used to think about them is I would always say they built up a solid book of business through word of mouth. But they get to a point where they think, okay, if we're going to grow, if we're going to reach this next like level, we have to do something different. What do we do? And so I would work with them on starting to kind of figure that out. It was always very interesting because it's in a lot of ways very similar to an early stage startup where they're doing a bunch of these things for the very first time.
Yeah.
They have the advantage though of actually having product market fit and knowing their customer a little bit better, but also the disadvantage of long ingrained habits and routines and systems. And so it's harder to change when you've been doing kind of the same thing. And the way I would think about it is if you've built up a solid book of business through word of mouth and you want to grow in a more systematic, kind of repeatable way, what your game really is increasing the number of mouths that are spreading that word. And so how do you make sure that more people know who you are? And I think personal branding is the easiest. It's also the most effective. And I think over the last, I mean, I've been thinking about this now for 6 years. It's really changed over the last few years. People do not follow company brands. Okay, 10 years ago, we might have followed Apple on Twitter or on Facebook or whatever. We don't do that now. We don't really give a shit what the company has to say because we know it is them. We know it is marketing. And it's sort of an interesting thing. As we've become more and more disconnected in our real lives, we seek out more connection in our digital lives. They're not going to follow your company brand. They're significantly less likely to read a company's blog and things like that. We even know Google, right? Like if you do a Google search, search results kind of suck, right? The only thing that shows up are the companies that have figured out how to seriously game the SEO. And it's the same stuff. It's super boring. It's all rehashed. P.S. I think that's why like ChatGPT has such an opportunity is, I mean, Gen Z, they search on TikTok. They use TikTok like Google. That's how they do research and things like that. So the whole personal branding thing is if you want more people to know about your company, to know about who you are, you can pour lots and lots of money into your company marketing. It's a long game and it's going to be really freaking expensive. The personal brand, it's just more effective. Like that's the whole business angle. On the other side, and I posted about this morning and you already commented on it. It's an incredibly rewarding sort of initiative or effort that you can undertake like as a person. There's something very powerful and I think kind of beautiful about putting yourself out there and sharing your story, your insight, your journey, and what you've learned along the way. It's deeply rewarding, like as a person, to realize that you can talk about the things you've been through and help people. And you also connect with incredible people along the way. Like some of my dearest friends in the world, some of whom I've never met in person, are people that I met on social media. Like I started a business with someone who we just, you know, we became Twitter friends and got pissed off at the same thing. And so we got on a call and like, you know, and so there's also something really just incredible about our ability, again, to connect as individuals while also growing our business and doing all these other things.
That's interesting. You mentioned it's a journey. It certainly has been for me. And I said, you know, to me, it's really been about getting better at telling my story and sort of getting over the fear that anybody would give a shit what my story is. And it's a real process. What are the biggest obstacles you think people face when they're doing this for the first time? You posted quite a bit about digital confidence lately, and I hadn't never heard of that term, and maybe you made it up, but it's really at the heart of a lot of this, I think.
Yeah. I think the number one challenge that people have is getting over the fear. And it's what I find really fascinating is sometimes they don't think it's fear. They'll be like, oh, well, I just never have the time. Okay. Well, you know, I'm talking to like CEOs and founders. And I'm like, you've done a million really, really hard, impressive things. I know well enough to know that when you want something, you make the time. It's not about finding the time. And I tend to work with what I lovingly refer to as more seasoned entrepreneurs. Like I don't work with 20-year-olds, right? Like I think there's plenty of content out there. And if you look at a lot of the personal brand like gurus, even on LinkedIn, it's like 27-year-old kids who aren't married, don't have a mortgage, they have no kids, they have like not very complicated lives, and they're the ones teaching you. And they've got some good advice, but they also are not going to understand some of the challenges that we face when we are more experienced. Because the big thing is you have more to lose, you have more at stake. I'm in my early 40s, and I think I was a little, I don't know, maybe a little naive. And so I just started kind of posting online. I had no freaking clue what I was doing, and I sort of learned as I went. But I think a lot of people look at that, and first off, they haven't been a beginner at anything in a really long time. And they probably have never been a beginner in a very public fashion. And so it makes them very nervous. Like they're used to really knowing what they're doing and having a plan and feeling confident in that. And this is one of those things where it's going to be uncomfortable. You're going to have to learn. One of the benefits is when you first start, your content probably won't be that good and it probably won't really get a lot of attention. And you're experimenting when no one's going to really see it. And so there's the stakes are a little bit lower. The biggest blocker for most people is fear. It's fear and a little bit of confusion and just not really being sure of like, okay, what do I do? How do I do this? Like, how do I get started in a way that isn't going to make me look like an idiot?
Yeah, it's, you know, you and I have talked about, when I decided to be just a little bit more present on LinkedIn, I didn't have a strategy. I was just sort of, hey, I've got some interesting thoughts. Maybe I'll just share them. And I was just using it as a tool to get over, I don't know whether it's imposter syndrome, but I was using it as a mechanism to say, I need to get more vocal and about sharing my experiences and my stories. And so it was really just a tool to do that. And then I started getting more strategic about it and having an ideal customer and pain points and everything. And that became, it is very much a journey because I couldn't have gotten to the strategic part if I hadn't first gotten over some of the fear, but then the fear just changes into something else. And all of a sudden it's not just interesting anecdotes from Bob that are kind of random and throwing shit against the wall, but now there's got to be a purpose to it. Now it's got to be thoughtful and engaging and there's got to be a hook and there's got to be in this and that. And that just comes with a whole new set of fear. So for me anyway, it's very, very much been kind of a journey.
Well, so I teach a cohort on this and we just wrapped class. And honestly, by the end, I felt like a broken record because I would say over and over and over, it's a journey, not a destination, because you're constantly learning. And even when you get pretty good at it and you kind of get in your rhythm, it's constantly evolving because P.S. you are constantly evolving. The thing that I think is beautiful about it, but also kind of freaking challenging, is that it is this intersection of something very professional and strategic and business focused and very, very personal. And there's not a lot that we do in our lives and in our work that really have this sort of this integrated connection between those two things. And the only way you're really going to be effective at doing this is if you bring the personal into it, right? Like there's tons of content of just like, these are the five things you need to know about this topic. It's not that interesting. And P.S., it won't stand out. How you differentiate is you bring you to it. And that makes it kind of scary. It makes it sometimes a little bit harder, but in the long run, easier, more powerful, and definitely more confidence building. One of the things that I find fascinating about it is exactly what you were just saying, is balancing that personal and that like authenticity and the strategic side. And I talk about this often, that when I first started, you know, I started creating content, mostly videos on LinkedIn in like spring of 2018. It's a long time. And I had no clue what I was doing. It was still early enough that there weren't lots of like, this is how you build your personal, like there wasn't a lot of like guides on how to do it. So I was totally just throwing shit at the wall. And I would just talk about stuff that I felt like talking about. And it worked. It resonated with people. I definitely got business from it, but it was like totally scattershot. And as I went on, I eventually got to this point where I was like, okay, it's time to get strategic. And I started, you know, really planning things. And honestly, my content really started to suck because I lost myself in it and I didn't enjoy it. It was like much harder and it didn't feel good because it wasn't really me, and it didn't really work because it wasn't really me. And it took a long time then for me to be like, okay, how can I still be strategic and intentional and talk about things that will bring me business, but also do it in a way that is like very me and it's like my style. And I always want someone to be able to read a post, and whether it has my picture, whether it's attached to my profile or not, they can look at it and be like, I'm pretty sure Casey Jones wrote this. And I think it took me a while to get there, but it feels good to be there.
One of the things that I think attracted me to your content initially was the vulnerability that you showed and some of the personal things that you shared. And it occurred to me as I'm trying to do a little bit more of that, that I'm probably sharing things about my life and painful things that have happened to me that like my best friends would probably read these posts and be like, yep, I had no idea Bob was going through that at that time. I don't know. Have you ever had that happen?
Oh, absolutely. although I will say what's also really interesting, all of like my really close friends in real life, like my two best girlfriends, she still has a Facebook account only so that she can look up people's birthdays when she forgets. She is never on there. She has a LinkedIn, but it's only so that she looks legit in her job, but like never, never on there. And my other friend, like on a regular basis, she'll be like, wait, how do I upload a picture to Instagram again? I want to show this picture of my kid. Like my friends, they do not do this at all. So it's also really funny where it's, you know, my friends online are my online friends. They're not my real life friends. And so it's sort of a weird thing. I talk about things I've been through and personal things in a way that, you know, like the post that I did recently about my kind of burnout in my job, I don't think my friends remember that. They like, if I brought it up, they'd be like, oh, I kind of remember when you had vertigo for 2 weeks. Sort of. They have no clue like what that was really about. And so I think that's the other thing that I find really interesting about it is, in some ways, like I find it easier to share those things online than I do in person. You wind up sort of finding your kind of tribe around those things. You know, people that have been through similar things or think about things in a similar way. How else do we meet, you know, sort of professional people? We go to like a networking event. you don't talk about anything real at a networking event, right? You're like chit-chatting over canapes and like it's super surface level. And so I think there's something kind of amazing about us having opportunities to talk about very real, meaningful, deep subjects with strangers. I don't know. It's sort of magical.
Well, yeah. And you and I have talked about this a little bit. I realized the power of it because you're very kind of vulnerable and authentic in a lot of your posts. And so I started following you. And then I said, you know what? It's time. I wanted to connect with Casey. And it's the first time I really thought about it in terms of when we got on the phone, it felt to me like not only did I already kind of know you, but it was the continuation of a conversation we were having, even though it was the first time we spoke.
I think that's the coolest part.
And that wouldn't happen with everybody. It's, you know, this idea of your 1,000 true fans. You don't need millions and millions of followers. You just need fans that you really connect with. And the only way, or at least I think the only way that I know how to do it, is to be incredibly kind of vulnerable and authentic. And you'll find each other. Life is just easier when you find your people and you work with those people. Everything is just so much easier and so much more fun.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to be clear. So one of the questions I get often is people will say, it really scares me to share something, you know, vulnerable. Like I don't know that I will ever be able to do that. And I'll always ask, okay, in your real life, okay, if you're working with clients or, you know, would you share vulnerable things with them kind of in person or on a call? And they're like, oh no, I wouldn't. And I'm like, well, then it wouldn't be authentic for you to do it online. But I do that in person. Like that's kind of how I am. And especially as a coach, I think a lot about like what makes me in the work that I do is that I have basically made every mistake that a person can make in life and in business. And I have worked very, very hard to learn from those. And so I bring those stories and those experiences to my work in one-on-one conversations, in coaching conversations. Like that's who I am. And so me doing it in public is me being authentically me. If you are someone who would never do that, then you don't do that online because that would be weird for you. It's not authentic. And so it's really about finding like, and I always encourage people to do this. Think about when you are sort of peak you in real life, like what are the things that you do? How do you show up? I mean, you'll also notice I curse in almost every post. I try to like do little asterisks instead of spell out the F word. But that's because I curse like a sailor in person. Like it would be weird if I didn't do that in my written content, right? And so it's all about thinking through like, how are you in real life when you are really being you? And how do you bring that energy and that style to your content and to your online brand?
Yeah, that's amazing, Casey. And so that leads me into something I wanted to talk to you about. You and I have talked briefly about Rick Rubin. So Rick Rubin, I think most people know, is a kind of a legendary music producer. He worked with some of the early, you know, hip hop artists. He's worked with the Beastie Boys, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and one of my all-time favorites, Johnny Cash. And he's written a new book called The Creative Act. Now, I haven't read the book, but I've been kind of binging because he's on a tour promoting this. I think he's doing the rounds on podcasts and stuff. And so I listened to it. Anyway, I'm curious because I've got some things that I've taken away from it. But what have you, we've kind of talked about our shared love of Rick Rubin. What have you enjoyed most about it?
Okay, so I just finished The Creative Act by Rick Rubin. And I obviously, like, I love a lot of his work. One of my absolute favorites is the work that he did with Johnny Cash. Like, those series of albums are, like, life-changing to me. But this book I really loved. And it's as my sort of journey, like, kind of personal brand and content creation journey has evolved, I've been thinking a lot more about the creative side of it, the artistry. And I just watched an interview, and I didn't watch the whole thing. I just watched a clip of him being interviewed by Lewis Howes. And Lewis Howes asks him something like, does it bother you when someone doesn't like your work? And he's like, no, I don't care. I don't make it for them. It's like, I make it for me. And he said, if you are making art with the sole purpose of pleasing others, he said, that's not art, that's commerce. He said, if you look at Hollywood and most of what is coming out of Hollywood now, they are focused on trying to make money off of it, trying to please a large audience. And so it's not artistic. It's not terribly interesting. It's not terribly good. And it doesn't work. And he speaks a bunch in The Creative Act about how you've got to make it for you. And, you know, we were talking about how do you balance the personal and the strategic in kind of your personal brand. And I think it really is important. Like, yes, you want to do it because you want to grow your business and you want to achieve these certain outcomes. But like I said before, when I was doing it solely for that and I lost myself in the process, it sucked. It wasn't fun to write. It wasn't fun to create. It didn't really work. People didn't really like it. I had lost myself in that process. And so I think there's something really powerful about, you know, if you do this kind of personal brand work, how do you bring the truly creative, the artistic to it so that you create something that you love, that it feels like you create something for you. And in the process, you find other people who enjoy it, learn from it, are inspired by it, all the rest. But there has to be that sort of kernel of like deep-seated truth, like at the base of all of it, that guides all of it.
Yeah. So that's interesting, Casey. That's the thing that really stuck with me about the Ruben stuff too. And he was talking about your audience is the last thing you should be thinking about, which is contrary to everything that I coach my clients on. And, you know, what is your audience? Who's your ideal customer? What is their pain points? What's the value provide? All that stuff. And I think what Ruben was saying is that if you create content for you, that is actually the best way to serve your audience because it will be true and it will be authentic and it will connect with the people you need to connect to. But it's an interesting thing I'm trying to reconcile with. What do you take away from that?
I'm in a similar boat. I think about this not just from a content perspective, but even just a business perspective. It's funny, now this conversation is going to make me finish this post. I've had a draft of a post for probably like a month or two, not just about creating content, but also like about how you create your business. And I actually think that you can be too customer centric. This is less true if you have like a SaaS company and you're like building this whole thing. But I think about when I first started my business, what I was really doing, I was kind of doing like freelance marketing strategy. And then I started having clients saying, oh, well, we really love the strategy. You know, can you help us with execution? And I was like, oh, like, okay, sure. And so I built an agency. And the longer I went on, I was very much like listening to what customers wanted and needed. And I was building a business around it. But I wound up building a business that I hated. Like I hated it. Running an agency, the way you are successful at an agency is you want clients for a long time. And the only way you get clients for a long time is if you are executing the details. I hate the details and I kind of suck at them. And so I built a whole business around doing things I didn't enjoy and it didn't play to my strengths. And like, yeah, it was customer centric. It was smart business decision, but it wasn't right for me. And I had a conversation with like a young guy yesterday, a mentorship conversation where I was like, look, you can make millions of dollars doing like damn near anything. I mean, if there's anything that the internet has shown us, it's like people have crazy successful businesses selling the weirdest selection of things. And it's really freaking cool. So you got to find what you want. Like, what do you want? Like, what calls to you? And I think one of the downsides of the like proliferation of free business advice is that we look at all of it and the purveyors of it talk about their sort of maxims or their guidelines or their rules as though they are universal truths. And they're not. They're right for some people, some businesses, in some contexts. And they very rarely give you any advice on how to figure out if it's right for you and for what you want and what you're trying to do and the audience you're trying to serve. And so it can be very easy for us to go like full steam ahead in a direction that it takes us a while to figure out like, this sucks. I don't like this. I don't want to do this. And again, like everything I've said about sort of the transformative aspect of kind of personal branding, I believe the same thing about entrepreneurship. It takes time and work and effort and lots of self-reflection to figure out like, is this what I want? Is this the kind of business that like makes me happy, that helps me have the life that I want to have and become the person I want to become? And like, if it isn't, okay, then what do I do? And how do I figure that out? And it's, I don't know. I don't think we talk about this in business very much. We talk always about like the customer and that, yeah, you gotta be customer centric. But if you're building something that isn't right for you, it won't work. It won't work in the long run, or it'll just make you really freaking miserable.
Yeah. Well, a couple of things about that, Casey, for sure. And I don't think anybody gets that right the first time, right? Because you kind of have to go through that, right? Where it's like, I care about my customers. I want to help them.
We learn it the hard way.
For sure. Yeah. The mistakes is what makes us kind of powerful. All this expertise out there and this feeling that it creates, like everybody has the answers but me. The answers aren't out there. And when I talk to people, I'm like, yeah, I've made lots of mistakes. Some of the things I've done have worked, and many of the things I've tried haven't. And the things that didn't work for me doesn't mean they won't work for you. The things that worked for me might not work for you. It's the putting everything together you know, and putting everything together I know, and bringing together those combined experiences. And we create something that neither one of us would have come up with on our own. And that answer is not out on LinkedIn anywhere. Right. But it is that process of kind of discovery that yields something that actually fits for you and your business. And I think, I mean, it's as much art and science and magic, but it's not as easy as, hey, I follow these people and they've said these are things to do. So I'm going to go try to bring them that. I get overwhelmed too when I'm looking for answers out there, and I know how they feel.
The other part of this is when a new strategy or a new approach becomes like the hot new thing, guess what? Everyone's freaking doing it. And so you won't stand out. Like you won't be unique in doing it. And so this is something I think about on the personal brand side. There's lots of, you know, digital products you can create or you can buy that are, they'll give you templates for posts that you should create. Okay. So you use a template. If there's like thousands, hundreds of thousands of people using the same template, like, yeah, you think you're going to really differentiate yourself. And the same is true with business styles. Like everyone's losing their mind over Alex Hormozi right now and his approach. I can't even tell you how many DMs, it's worse on Twitter than on LinkedIn, how many DMs I get from these like 24-year-old, it's always dudes, who clearly have no real experience, and they're sending you these templated emails. And I know it's the exact format that Alex Hormozi teaches in his book. And it all sounds the exact same. And it's just cringe inducing. Not only is it probably not the right path for you, it's not going to work because literally everyone is doing it. And we are successful when we stand out, not when we blend in.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that really hits home for me. I know what you're saying. So you write really well on LinkedIn. And what I thought might be fun to do is if I told you some of your hooks, I went through some of your posts and I picked out a hook, would you know what that post was about and what your kind of key message was?
Probably.
Okay. Here's a few that I really liked. You must learn to love the suck.
So that one is basically all about how growth is really freaking painful, and it's hard and it's uncomfortable. And if you want to like evolve in life and in business, you've got to learn to love the fact that it's going to be kind of a miserable process some of the time.
Yeah, I love it. What about this one? I hate to break it to you, but your business is not unique.
Well, I talk about this all the time, especially if you're in a service-based business. I don't care what you do, who you are, who you do it for. There's like thousands, probably tens of thousands of people that do basically the exact same thing. And so thinking that the results you deliver or the way you deliver them differentiates you, total BS. What differentiates you is you, and it's the experience you create. It's how you make your customers feel. And if you can get really clear on that and really intentional about that, and then embrace it, amplify it, that's how you stand out. That's how you differentiate.
That's interesting. I mean, I felt that not only in the work that I'm doing on LinkedIn with my business, but for example, even this podcast, I was like, how many podcasts are there? Like a million? Like what? Like you could just get crippled with, well, what am I going to say that nobody else has ever heard? Nothing.
Nothing.
You know what? Yeah, it's just maybe you can provide a unique perspective or just have interesting conversations. And if anybody else cares, then they'll come and join you there.
So, and here's the thing. This is the other reason why I'm going down this process of like consuming more content around the creative process. I'm reading the book Steal Like an Artist. And there is literally nothing unique to be said anymore. Like there just isn't. And so you can just kind of give that up. Everything is derivative. That's fine. What is unique though, is there's no one on this planet, alive or dead, who has your weird, like blend of personality, background, experiences, skills, passions, like hard shit you've overcome, all these other things. That is what makes you, your business, everything else unique. And like, I think there's something kind of amazing about that. So it's like, you don't have to worry about saying anything unique. You won't. It's impossible. So instead, it's just kind of being you and being like your own kind of quirky self. And it's funny. I feel like this is sort of the perfect like callback. That's why I love Portland. It's all about embracing your weird, quirky self. And I think we all need a little more of that in life.
Yeah. It just occurred to me I don't know why I didn't think of it this way as I was listening to you say that, you know, that 99% of all songs that have ever been written have been written on the same five chords, right? And yet you can still hear a song that's using the same five chords that Tom Petty used or the Stones used or who everybody has used. And it will sound unique. The message in the song, it's a love song it's a country song about losing your dog or whatever. But there's something about it that's unique. The whole thing of it, the melodies, the chorus, the words, the music, it all sounds fresh because it's deeply personal or something like that, right?
It's how it all comes together. So you'll appreciate this. I don't know if you've watched it, but like, and I don't know if they made public what he did in the courtroom, but I know I've seen multiple interviews where Ed Sheeran basically talks through what his defense was when Marvin Gaye's like family sued him for stealing or copying. And I don't even remember which Marvin Gaye song it was and what he does. And it's amazing to watch him do it. Is he'll be like, these three chords, because their whole argument was it's based on these three chords. And he's sitting there with his guitar. And in 5 minutes, he plays the sort of the chorus, the like main melody of like 20 different, wildly different pop songs using the exact same chord progression. And you immediately are like, yeah, that's a faulty argument, because Marvin Gaye's family could literally sue anyone. Like any songwriter, any creator, because it's like the most commonly used combination. And it's really cool to watch him do it and watch how fast he can go through all of these. I said he did 20. I think it's more than 20. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah, that guy is insanely talented for sure. Okay, this has been so good. You mentioned a book and Rick Rubin. What else are you binging on these days as we kind of wrap things up here?
Ooh, interesting. Well, I'm a super book nerd, so I'm like always, always reading. And I read a really wide range of things. Like I said, I'm going through, and actually I'm forgetting his name. I bought all three of his books. Steal Like an Artist, Show Your Work, and Keep Going by Austin Kleon. I'm in the middle of Steal Like an Artist, which I think is phenomenal. And you'll appreciate this. I've shared this with my husband this morning. One of the things he talks about at the very beginning is he talks about how, and I'm forgetting which Beatles album it is, but when Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys listened to this Beatles album, he thought, oh my God, this is like a life-changing piece of music. This is so incredible. I'll never be able to create something as amazing as this. And he sat down and immediately started writing God Only Knows, which, by the way, I think is
the most beautiful song ever. Yep.
Most beautiful song. My husband and I eloped, so we didn't have a first dance, but we have always been like, if we had a first dance, it would have been to that song. It's just heartbreaking. So then John and Paul of the Beatles heard Pet Sounds and heard that song, and they said to each other, oh my God, this album is absolutely life-changing. We will never create something as beautiful as this. And they immediately sat down and started working on Sgt. Pepper. And so it's like there's this amazing kind of full circle thing about being inspired by others, stealing their inspiration or stealing their kind of approach to things and making it our own. And I think there's something, I don't know, I feel like I'm calling lots of things beautiful this morning, but it's, I think there's something really beautiful about that circle, that process of creation and recreation.
Yeah. Boy, I thought you had me at Johnny Cash. But when you bring up that Beach Boys song, it's just like, I've tried to play it on my guitar, and Brian Wilson's like a genius. It's all these weird chords. It's kind of more a piano song, but I've never been quite able to master it. And honestly, I don't think I could get through it without crying anyway, if I was sitting around a campfire. So what's the point?
Yeah, no, it's such an incredibly heartbreaking song. When I need to feel something, that song is one of probably three or four that I will play.
Yeah. This has been awesome, Casey. For people that like what they've heard today, where can they go to find you and learn more about you?
Well, we talked about it. So come find me on LinkedIn. And my handle on all the socials is A Better Jones. And so you can always find me that way too.
Yeah, I love that. A Better Jones. Yeah. That's great. Well, thank you so much. This has been so much fun. I was really looking forward to it for a while, and you certainly didn't let me down. This has been awesome, Casey.
No, it was so much fun. Thank you.
The Growth Mixtape Podcast with Bob Mathers is produced by Bespoke Projects. Music by Je M'appelle Walter Cronkite. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to follow and rate us. When you do this, it helps to raise our podcast profile so that more people can find us. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn using the link in the show notes.